You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome in, everybody, to the Tuesday, December 5th edition of the Landry Football Podcast, where we talk all things football all year round. Folks, I want to remind you, when we get started today, follow us on Twitter, at Landry Football, for all the latest information, whether it's the coaching search information, news and notes from around college football, the NFL, keeping you up-to-dated on what's going on. That's what we try to do. We try to do it through there. Of course, you want to check out LandryFootball.com for more in-depth information. We've got some free information on there, including this podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. But we also have the premium package, which gives you the inside the film room, the detailed kind of off-the-market stuff that we just don't want to get into publicly. But we'll give it to our private members, and that's what we do as far as our membership. What's the membership like? I think you need to take a look at the options. You can get it for a month, 3 months, 6 months, or a year. The best offer we got going right now, I got to tell you, and you should take advantage of it. I decided to, through the holiday spirit, to give a year subscription for over 67% off. Yeah, that's right, $49.99 a year. That'll take you through the rest of the football season, all of recruiting, all through NFL free agency, all through the draft, all through next football season, all through next coaching search season, you name it, for $49.99. So you can take advantage of that. That's up on the website. Hey, what we're going to get into today, of course, we've got the four teams in the college football playoffs. We're going to talk about that and maybe about some ideas of what I would like to see different and how things may be determined, how it could not change the system, but make it a little bit better and a little bit more seamless. But I do think they got the four best teams in it. We'll talk a little bit about that. A lot of times to break down the matchups, but we want to get into that. Just four games left, folks, in the NFL season. So we're going to get you updated on where things are there and how things looked on tape. But we're going to start again with the coaching search world and coaching search business, and we're going to touch on a few things. First of all, we've got some breaking news as we're doing this, and if you follow me on Twitter, at Landry Football, you would have known this. Central Florida has hired Josh Heupel, the Missouri offensive coordinator, as head coach. And the reasoning behind that, when Danny White was taking a look, there were some really good candidates. It never really developed with a Kevin Sumlin as much as people thought in the media. But I thought Troy Walters had a really good chance to get the job. He's on the staff with Scott Frost. And, you know, I think would have been a really good hire for Danny. But when Danny started to look at situations, he obviously, and you always have to understand this, when you're having success, first of all, when you're having a coaching hire, it's normally, when you're at a big school anyway, you're firing the guy because he's not been successful, so you tend to want to get something different than what you had. Well, programs like this, sometimes, what I mean by this, group of five jobs, sometimes you fire coaches, but often they leave for better jobs, power five jobs. Well, in those cases, what we normally see is trying to hire somebody similar to what you had before. That's exactly what Danny White sees in Josh Heupel. He sees Scott Frost, quarterback, coach's son, been around the game all his life, been a successful coordinator at the college level. Scott Frost, never a head coach. Josh is the head coach, and he had a firsthand knowledge of him. Why? Well, Danny White's brother, Brian White, is the deputy athletic director at, you guessed it, Missouri, where Josh Heupel is. So he knows him very well. He also has a good relationship with Jim Sterk, the athletic director at Missouri. So it made all the sense in the world if you knew what they were the process they were going through. And, oh, by the way, home run hire number two. Hire Randy Shannon as your athletic, as your defensive coordinator. Good recruiter. Obviously can secure the defensive side of the ball. So they're off to a very good start. Good move there. at Central Florida. Rice is going to hire Mike Bloomberg as their new head coach. He's the Stanford offensive coordinator. Again, why is that model in play? Of course, he's been around the Stanford program, knows how to recruit kids with to a program with high academic standards, know how to coach him up. That's what they're hoping for at Rice. It's been made official at Arizona State. Folks, I'm not going to lie to you and sugarcoat it. I think what they're doing at Arizona State is about as weird as I've seen anything done. But when you've got a guy that's an athletic director that's really in over his head and clueless, you're putting together a staff together with a head coach that, and I love Herm, but head coach anywhere at this point is a joke for him. And it almost sounds like they're hiring it for publicity reasons. You know, he's Mr. Soundbite, but you spend $12 million to fire the other coach, but you're going to keep the staff that contributed to the what you thought was a problem. I mean, I know that the relationship with Ray Anderson and Ty Graham were not good, but to basically say, look, we're going to spend $12 million. We'll fire you. We're going to keep all your guys that work for you and basically contributed to the record that you had. It really looks like one of the stranger moves that we have seen. Still waiting on Tennessee. We're going to get into that. Arkansas, listen, they've got their new athletic director in here. Hunter Hurecek is a guy that is a very good athletic director, good hire as AD by Arkansas. Look out for Chad Morris. Is a guy that Hunter was interested in hiring back in his Houston days when they hired Tom Herman. Lost out on him. He had just taken the job at SMU. So they ended up hiring Tom Herman. Keep an eye out for him. Mike Norvell is another possibility as well. So we'll see how that plays out. We're still waiting on Willie Taggart to make a decision. Florida State, Oregon. Florida State made an offer of, and listen, keep in mind that Oregon put together a new restructured deal that's going to pay him $4 million a year. That's their offer. Florida State offers them $4.1 million a year, which is a little curious to think that you would go ahead and do that. You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They were told that's not going to do it. And so they went back to the table. It's believed that Florida State has upped their offer to $5 million a year. You know, from the standpoint of Willie Taggart, he wants a comparable deal to what, say, a Scott Frost is getting at Nebraska to go to Florida State. You know, Scott had really good success at Central Florida, and Willie, listen, you can't look at records and say that, well, the record is not as good. Folks, you have to look at where you're going. Rebuilding South Florida and trying to retool Oregon. Listen, I think if you're Florida State, if you want to hire the guy, why would you offer him basically the same money he was making? Well, I think they got that figured out. They're trying to work on a few things. We should know by tonight where that's going to lead and where it's going to go. If he takes the Florida State job, Oregon will look inside to Mario Cristobal, Jim Leavitt, consider them strongly. But also, I think they'd have some interest in talking with Kevin Sumlin. I know he would like to talk to them. So the latest on Tennessee, we're going to start there. And got a really good email from Chad, one of our emailers and followers on Twitter and I think to our website. They wanted me to address something, so I thought it fit into the coaching search issue, so we're going to get right to it. And as it relates, Chad asks, as it relates to the Tennessee hire, we're going to talk a little bit about the overall where Tennessee has gone and where they are now with this coaching search. But he asks, is T. Martin ready? Would they groom him for head coach under a veteran coach? Well, no, I don't know that that's the way I would say it. I think what that Philip Fulmer's trying to do right now is in this process of what I would call complete dysfunction of authority, of who's making the call, in the previous administration, recent previous administration, where there were a lot of different factions going in a different direction. And you can debate whether, quote-unquote, they're sabotage or this or that. I'm not going to go there. But clearly that they were not on the same page on who they were considering and where they're now headed. Now, I can tell you where Philip Fulmer is headed. And in all this dysfunction, the one thing that I think is imperative in Philip Fulmer's mind, knowing him like I do, is to bring the Tennessee family back together. That's what Philip has been brought to do. And, you know, we're going to see how this plays out. But I think what he's looking strongly is the best way to put together a Tennessee reunion, so to speak. Now, there's some possibilities there. T. Martin coming to Tennessee as an assistant head coach, offensive coordinator, something like that, is a possibility. Is he ready to be a head coach? Listen, I think he's probably ready to get an opportunity, much like Josh Heupel just got his opportunity at Central Florida and Scott Frost got one at Central Florida. I think that he would be – I recommended him highly at South Alabama, go back home to Mobile, be a head coach. This is before all the Tennessee stuff started to play out, because I think he's ready to be a head coach somewhere. Is he ready to be a head coach in the SEC? The whole thing about, well, you just put a head coach up and you put guys around him that can cover him up, that's not how you build a coaching staff, okay? That doesn't have much short-term, certainly doesn't have long-term success. I think it is a tough job to put him in this situation at Tennessee at a big-time job. I think it is difficult. Now, would T come with a head coach and be the assistant head coach and offensive coordinator? And I think he might. I think it would depend, but I think he might. Now, Chad asks about, you know, somebody like Les Miles or David Cutcliffe. Well, Les Miles is not going to Tennessee. Okay, I can tell you that. That's never been in play. I know in the media it's been played up. Les Miles is interested in coaching, and he's interested in that job, and he knows Philip Fulmer. And he called Philip Fulmer a while back before Philip was even involved in the coaching search, before he was named athletic director. He is interested. They did meet. They're friends. They know one another. They coach against one another. All of those things are true, but there's not been any real ties to Les Miles being a candidate there. David Cutcliffe is not interested in going back to Tennessee because he wants to finish his career out at Duke. Why would he go to Tennessee to groom somebody to be a head coach? Well, David doesn't want to do that. He wants to coach at Duke for several more years. So why would he do that? No, I think that is kind of typical looking at it from a, well, what would be good for my school? Well, what's going to be good for the candidate? It's like when I made trades in the NFL, you can't sit there and, you know, try to see, well, how can I screw somebody over? You're not going to, you got to do a deal that's going to work for both, or you're not going to get a deal done. You know, if you know, the thoughts of bringing the old band together has some merit, but it depends upon who. I mean, Kevin Steele would be a strong possibility to come over, certainly would come over as a head coach with T. Martin, and I think that combination is workable to get done. Kevin Steele's not going to leave Auburn to go to Tennessee as a defense coordinator. Okay, the fact that he's a Tennessee guy, he's not going to leave. He's not going to leave unless he's getting the opportunity. So it doesn't make sense. I mean, I don't think John Chavis is the answer at Tennessee. I think at that point, you're trying to put up a front of, let's go back to the path. Let's remind folks that Philip Fulmer and John Chavis were fired at Tennessee because the program slipped and got worse, and they needed to be replaced. Now, they've done an awful job of replacing them, but it's gotten to the point now where things were bad. Tennessee fans want to go back to bad because bad is better than disaster. So I get it. You know, I think what's important here is to see how this plays out. Chad Morris, to me, is an outstanding coach. Probably not the right fit offensively for what Philip would like this team to be. Philip's going to be really involved in this on his style. I don't know that Chad Morris fits the offensive style that Phillip wants to run. And if Chad Morris comes in, he's running the offense. So there's no spot for T. Martin. That's why I think the reason why you're hearing the assistant coaching connections, Mel Tucker, Kevin Steele, is because those guys are perceived as defensive guys that could be the head coach with T. Martin as the assistant head coach and offensive coordinator. So I think that is likely the direction that they're going to go. There's never has been anything to the Chris Peterson or all of that stuff. It's really more about trying to put a group together that's, listen, that fits Phillip's image of wanting to get back to some Tennessee roots and toughness and whatnot. And if he's going to do that and that's his focus, then Kevin Steele and T. Martin is the best fit in that regard. Is it the best fit for the football program? Well, the other options are limited. They're not going out there and hiring Kevin Sumlin. Like I said, they're not going and hire Les Miles. You know, David Cutcliffe's not interested. You know, it's not a, it is a job that is still very attractive. And there's still a number of coaches that would be very good fits for them. And, you know, guys that I think are up-and-comers. But they don't want the up-and-comers. They felt like they had an up-and-comer. That didn't work. But, you know, I think that when you look at the whole Butch Jones situation, what's played out there is Cincinnati coach was, you know, the umpteenth choice, you know, didn't work out. I think that with Phillip in a short-term role as an AD, and I say short-term, I mean, I don't expect Phillip to be the AD there in 5 years. I don't know, maybe he will, but it's short-term. I think he wants to have one of his guys or somebody that he's comfortable with, even if it's not a Tennessee guy, who's somebody that's going to be able to run something similar, be a physical team, go back to kind of what he believes in. And certainly Mel Tucker, T. Martin, Kevin Steele, T. Martin, would probably make the most sense in Phillip's eyes. Now, what type of influence is he getting? Is that the best fit? Again, Chad Morris is a bright young head coach. He's got a great shot at the Arkansas job. I think he would be a better fit there than try to go to Tennessee where he would be basically not the ideal fit for what Phillip wants. And I think that's important to understand. So we'll see how that plays out with Tennessee. Now, I wanted to address something. I want to get to a couple of things before I get into the on-the-field stuff. Is on coaching searches, and then I want to get into a little bit of how you evaluate teams and how people evaluate teams and all the hullabaloo about who should have gotten in and who should have not gotten in. And a little bit about tips of, I think, how you're best able to evaluate these teams. But I want to address one more thing about I get to ask this a lot because when you go on Twitter, and what I try to do with my involvement in coaching search work is to try to provide information for fans that they can use, that they enjoy, they want to know, I understand it. There's certain information that you can't repeat in my position, but that stuff is not concrete anyway. It's talk. Well, you don't want to just repeat talk. Talk is just that you're trying to give information, ascertain information, help through the process of your work without compromising any of your work and not basically repeating things that should not be repeated in public. But, you know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the difficulty of the job of reporters who are trying to gather information and try to cultivate sources. And just wanted to give, again, an idea because you get this a lot. Well, that's not what we're hearing. So-and-so is reporting. I don't care what other people are reporting. I respect their right to do it, and they're much better reporters than I could ever be because they're on the outside trying to gather information. I'm on the inside usually getting asked questions by reporters. So I don't have the job that they have, and they don't have the job that I have. But let me just tell you that, and it particularly pertains to the Tennessee search, where there's been more misinformation come out of that search than anybody. And there are two reasons for that. One is because you have a dysfunctional search where a lot of people are talking and a lot of people don't know what the heck's going on. And some of them who are involved in it think they know what's going on and maybe are involved. They really were not as involved as they thought. And while the information is real as it was told to the reporter, it's not real in the as it turns out by the guy giving it to him, because the guy giving it to him doesn't have any real say-so as much as he might have thought. How sources are cultivated and agendas are put out is really interesting. And we saw this in the Tennessee search. Very clear. Philip Fulmer sabotaged the search. We had major reporters doing that. Well, they're not making that up, folks. They're getting it from somebody, but who they're getting it from? Well, they're obviously getting it from somebody that believes that Philip did that. What is their agenda? And without knowing their source, you pretty much can gather kind of what side, if not directly, who the source is. Then you have the others who say, oh, no, no, Philip never did that. He wasn't even involved, didn't make any calls. None of that happened. Well, again, that's the agenda from the other side. Always understand that when you get information and people are reporting it, where are they getting it from? They don't know it firsthand. They don't know. They're getting it and then repeating it. And as I say, guessing and being right is not knowing. It's just you're gathering information. And to me, if you don't, we don't know it firsthand. We don't sit there and discuss it. And sometimes that even changes. But always keep in mind that when somebody puts it out, it's not that the reporter has an agenda. On the contrary, the reporter is trying to be accurate. But the reporter is getting the information from somebody that has an agenda. And if they don't know the situation well enough, then they don't know that they're being used to put out a certain agenda. It's tough for them to siphon through. And very often, they don't have the source from both sides. So if you're reporting on a school, that's great if you've got great sources there. But what if you can't go to the candidate and get the same information to confirm it? Well, then you're like, well, you're reporting that Jeff Brohm is going to be the new head coach at Tennessee when Jeff Brohm never even talked to them officially because you were not able to confirm it from the candidate side. And somebody from the coaching side is putting stuff out there that he believes, and then he tells it to a reporter and it gets misplaced. It gets put out there with the proper intent but with the wrong information. I want to get into a little bit of the rankings this week, the final rankings. And I learned something a long time ago, and this is something that I think, needs to be brought up with relation to kind of a lot of the media and the analysts kind of having agendas in their own way of about who should be in, who should not be in, this or that. And one thing I do have noticed, if there is a lot of bias that is truly being propagated out there to put forth, whether it's to counteract people. I think social media has gotten under the skin of a lot of these media folks, and I think they want to be proven to be right. You take a stand, you're wrong, people grill you, people come after you, nameless, faceless people, and you want to be able to get it right, and it infuriates you when you're not. The whole Ohio State, Alabama, the veracity of which both sides took the angle and the travesty this way or that way is all nonsense. First of all, I learned from a long time ago when I started out in scouting, and as a coach, you tend to, and that's where I came from a coaching standpoint, you tend to grow fond of players that work hard. You tend to develop a feeling towards a player, positively or negatively. One of the things that you do as a scout, I learned this, you don't get close to a player. You don't get too close to a situation. It clouds your objectivity. And you don't want to come out and make rash statements. You don't want to come out and make quick judgments. That's what we call eyeball scouting. It's not a good evaluation. Now, I'm talking about evaluating players, but the same thing is applicable to teams. And so I think when you say something, and you're on record of that, and everybody's on record with Twitter, then what happens is you feel like you have to justify that to be right, to be smart. It's not really true in the football realm, maybe in the media and the world of fandom, but it's not important to make a quick judgment, a quick assessment. It's important to make an accurate one. So I learned in the early days of scouting that you let the information, whether it's information, evaluation, let that guide you to your decision, not make a snap judgment and try to justify your point, because you can make a case for anything and anybody. Don't try to justify, try to analyze. And it was something that I learned that I use to this day. When I evaluate a player and I evaluate a team, I use the whole Tom Landry theory that he taught me a long time ago. That when you look at the first film, don't take any notes. You're watching a film on a player, you're watching a film on a team, just watch it. Get a feel for things, where guys lined up, the pace, the flow, know who's where. What. Don't write notes on the first film. Then go to the second film and begin writing your notes. And then you go back and watch that first film again, and you'd be surprised how different things might be. And let me explain why. When you sit there and you look at things, whether it's a game or a team, a coach or a scheme, anything that you're looking at, we tend to make snap judgments. This situation, oh, they're going to blow this team off the ball the entire game. You know, the first drive, it's this. It's this guy has got great pass rush ability. This guy is great hand punch. This guy is a great route runner. This guy can throw that route perfectly. Immediately got to judge it, right? Write it down. Well, then subconsciously, even though we haven't told anybody and it's just us in our notes, when you do that, all of a sudden, subconsciously, I learned this through by fault, you tend to justify your initial notes. So if you avoid taking initial notes, you become a lot better in terms of being able to evaluate. So, listen, I'm not encouraging or telling fans or media they should be objective. That's your business. But I hear people say, I'm objective, and I listen to them and I say, no, you're not. You clearly don't know what you're talking about. So when you evaluate a player, a team, a coach, anything, try not to justify what you're saying. Try not to support what you're saying. Try to study it, and then based on that, come up with a decision. Objectivity is having no decision in mind before you make a decision. Making a case for your opinion is nothing but lawyering, being an attorney, a lawyer, no objectivity. If you pull for a team, you see half a game. So keep that in mind. It's important to be objective. We all have naturally biased views on things. But if you tend to take it out and try not to react to what other people are saying, I think that's what happens today. I think we're seeing, and I want to lead it into the Alabama-Ohio State conversation. We have a lot of Alabama hype by the people that promote Alabama, and we have a lot of Alabama fatigue by the people that are counteracting the people that are the pro-Alabama people. So you got the pro-Alabama people fighting against the anti-Alabama people, and they all say, claim that they're objective, and neither one of them are close to being objective, but they are aggravated by what one is saying versus the other is saying. And then you got the Fox people and the ESPN people who, some of them get fired by one and go to the other. They don't like one another. They're trying to fight for ratings. They're trying to, you know, it is comical how much the media wants to be part of the story today as opposed to analyzing and reporting. And that's why, for the most part, it's entertainment and may draw viewership. But the level of intellect on football has never been so low. I don't get a chance to watch a lot of TV because I'm working and looking at film and doing my work for teams and college programs. But when I do watch it, I can tell you that the level of football knowledge is so poor. You can tell who looks at film, or more importantly, who does not, and who's trying to just basically BS their way into having comment. And again, it's fine, it's their business, but I think it's important to call it out for what it is. And then we've got the mainstream media and the fans that buy into what guys like that say, and I think it's pretty comical. All right. Did they get it right? Did the committee get it right? Do you think it's the right way to go to put Alabama in over Ohio State? Well, yes, I do. Why? Because watching this team all year long, there's no doubt in my mind that they're the better team. Ohio State's lost two games by decisive margins, including an Iowa team that's pretty average. An Alabama team loss to Auburn on the road. It's the only loss. That's huge. It's a big difference between separating. Well, winning your conference championship should matter. Well, it does. It's great. But winning a conference championship in one league doesn't mean that you're better than a team from another league that doesn't win their conference. That's why there's not a requirement to win your conference champion. There's no doubt in my mind that if I put these teams up against Clemson or Oklahoma or Georgia, that Alabama has a good chance against all three. I don't think Ohio State has much of a chance against any of the three. That factors into me. When I grade them out and watch them and watch what they've done all year long, it's not even close. And I think while myself, I thought the beginning of the year, based upon last year's spring football, that the Big Ten would have three teams that are national championship worthy, in Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. As I watched these teams this year, it was clear. They did not. None of those teams were national championship worthy, and it's proven out. As opposed to the SEC, where Georgia, Alabama, and Auburn, all three were national playoff caliber most of the year. So, I don't know this whole – I'm over the whole what conference is better and whatnot. I can tell you that it, as it relates to the top of college football, the SEC has had more teams that are national playoff caliber. There's no doubt in that. USC, you watch this USC team, good team at best. Not to the level of Alabama, not even close. So, to me, I think they got it right. Now, I want to spend a little time addressing something that I think on how I believe things should be done in terms of college football. And I believe we went down the wrong path years ago. I think that we should have used the bowl systems to incorporate a lot of what we're doing today in college football. And we've done it with the BCS. We did it with the BCS, but what I mean by that is I think we should have, before we went to the BCS, we should have had the bowl games. Put the best teams in the best bowl games and then pick two after that. And I still think that would be a better way to do it. And if you wanted to pick four after the bowl games, that's fine as well. But one of the problems that you have in college football, and one of the things we need to correct, is we need to get a more unified scheduling so that you can have more apples-to-apples comparisons of schedules of who the best teams are. the difficulty of looking at a schedule at the beginning of the year is you don't know who's going to be really good or who's going to be pretty average or who's going to be pretty weak going into the year. Your opinion of a schedule might look completely different at the end of the year as opposed to the beginning of the year. Save for, you know, look at, for example, somebody like Florida State. We're talking about all last season that Florida State, Alabama could be a possible preview of a potential rematch come playoff time. Well, guess what? That's Florida State's had a disastrous season, had to reschedule the UL Monroe game just to get bowl eligible. Who could have thought that? Now, is that a weak schedule? No. It's about you play who you play, and who you play doesn't make you better or worse. It just makes who your opponents you're playing are better or worse. But here's one way to deal with it. You play your schedule. Then after the schedule's over, you know who the best teams, who's had the best season, and who's proven to be the best teams. Put them in bowl games, the best bowl games. Then after the bowl games, you pick two or pick four after that. Just, you know, you pick two or you pick four after the bowl games. In essence, you're taking the bowl games and making it an extension of the regular season. Putting great matchups together in neutral sites, and then you're picking two teams after that for a championship game or four teams for semifinals and a championship. That, to me, would be the more prudent way to do it. Couple of reasons. College football loses the entire month of December after having a great fall. We're going to see some bowl games, and I'm going to watch every one of them. We're going to see Army-Navy this weekend. I'm going to watch it. But people just go away from college football. They lose interest in it. Listen, a lot of people just not going to be all that interest a week from Saturday when the New Orleans Bowl and the Auto Nation Cure Bowl and the Las Vegas Bowl and the New Mexico Bowl and the Camellia Bowl start. They might catch some of it. Really not going to be that interested. They're not going to be interested until you get to the major bowl games towards January 1st. Well, folks, if you put the best teams in bowl matchups, I'm not talking about just 4-8, you put the best bowl matchups out there, the teams that have had the best season, you put them in these bowl matchups, and you can make December for college football what March is for college basketball. Play these games during the holiday season, starting at around the 19th or 20th of December, and then you play these games leading up to the big January 1st bowl games. We play the traditional January 1st bowl games, and it leads to picking four teams. That, to me, would make the regular season still important because you would still need to win your conference or play very well to go into a big bowl game. Go to a big bowl game, you win that, you got a chance to be picked for the playoffs. It takes the regular season and makes the regular season important. It makes the conference championships important. And yes, it makes the bowl games important. So instead of all these kids deciding, I'm not going to play in these bowl games, well, they're going to be playing in them now because, A, it's going to, you know, give their team a chance to make the playoffs. Be in a position, who's to say if a Central Florida played a couple of teams in a tougher, you know, in out of conference and, you know, somebody like that beat somebody in a bowl game, who's to say they couldn't make the four? At that point, if they beat one of the teams that's right now selected in the four, I think we put too much on just saying just the regular season. What I'm saying is let's make the regular season important. Let's extend the regular season into the bowl games. Make the bowl games just the next game that the teams play, the best teams in the country, that is. Match them up and then pick four after that. That's the way I see it. All right. Some of the bowl matchups are really interesting outside of the championship games. We're going to get more into that. We're going to really break down Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma in several ways. But we're going to break down every bowl matchup, every single one of them on LandryFootball.com. We'll do it, talk briefly about it here in the podcast, but you're going to have the full breakdown of everything you need to know about these matchups. Not really surprised with what happened just from this last week's games. There's no question that Georgia did a great job in their ability to adjust up against Auburn's success the first time they met. Talked about the key. You've got to slow down Auburn's run game. Clearly, Auburn's run game was not nearly what it was in the first matchup. And they got Auburn's defense on the field more and wore them down, worked to the running game. Big, big change around there. Thought Oklahoma would be too much for TCU. They were. Love the Memphis Central Florida game. Not much defense, but sure a lot of offense. USC getting it done against Stanford, kind of expected there. I was thought Miami would have played Clemson better, but not surprised. And I thought that Wisconsin had a really good shot, and they did to some degree. Ohio State's just clearly better and kind of proved it. So not a lot of surprises. It made for some interesting drama, obviously, on Sunday as the selections were made with Alabama. All right, NFL. Folks, we're getting down to the last quarter of the season. Some interesting dynamics. Pittsburgh getting it done last night against Cincinnati, and certainly our thoughts and prayers are Ryan Shazier. The update on him is that he is improving in the hospital, doesn't need surgery, but not out of the woods yet, can move his lower extremities. But they say in this situation the next 24, 48 hours are critical. So please, thoughts and prayers out to him as much as you can. Pittsburgh stays right where with New England and fight for home field advantage. It looks like those teams don't. It? And Pittsburgh doesn't look like they're playing well enough to beat New England, but their home field advantage, they play better. Who knows? Those clearly look like the two best teams. The AFC West has suddenly become fun with Kansas City collapsing. Philadelphia loses, but still right there. Minnesota would have the number one seed at this point, so they're in danger of losing that. The Vikings playing well against Atlanta, big win for them. The Saints beat Carolina, big win for them. Thursday night, we're going to break down that big game, the Saints and the Falcons on Thursday, as that game could pretty much put the Saints in prime position as they've swept Carolina. If they can go three games up with three games left against Atlanta, they're going to be pretty much close to getting in there. But again, you lose a game and then lose another, then you find yourself in a tough spot. So the Saints are trying to hold it together, and the Rams are trying to hold off Seattle as they continue to play pretty well. They've got Philadelphia this week. We've got some interesting games with the Raiders and the Chiefs in that division. Minnesota plays Carolina. Philly plays the Rams, and Seattle, Jacksonville is going to be a really good one. We'll see it play out. But we're going to break down this week's games coming up on Thursday, kind of tell you what we think. But this past week, a couple of things that jumped out at me that I'd like to mention is Jimmy Garoppolo looks like he's going to have a chance to really take over this offense for San Francisco. Really positive there how they're playing. This Denver team is just collapsing and getting worse, and John Elway's responsible for all of it. This may be a coaching change after 1 year, a rare situation. The Kansas City meltdown is getting ugly to watch, yet they still got a shot to hold on to their division. Detroit just cannot find a way to string good plays together. Bad luck, bad decisions. Just been really interesting to watch this team. The Giants implosion, of course, as expected. Ben McAdoo, Jerry Reese fired as head coach and general manager. We'll see where they go there. Dave Gettleman would be my choice there to kind of stabilize and get the Giants. He knows that organization. He's a really good evaluator, tough guy. He would be the guy that I would choose to, if I were them, to direct this team going forward and hiring its new head coach. Philadelphia, as I mentioned, losing to Seattle. This Seattle team knows how to win. They know how to play hard, play well. Russell Wilson's been phenomenal. Not impressed with him, just impressed with how they know how to play these type of games in these type of situations. It's December, so they know how to get it done. All right, that'll do it for today. We're going to be back on Thursday to update you on everything, break down the weekend in the NFL, and get you updated on anything going on in college football. We'll have some coaching search updates at that point. I want to remind you, though, for the up-to-date information, follow me on Twitter at Landry Football and follow us on the website, LandryFootball.com, for all the coaching search latest, all the film breakdown latest. So check us out there. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
When you are looking for the latest news and notes going on in the world of mixed martial arts, the MMA Report podcast is the place to come. News from the UFC, Bellator, World Series of Fighting, and so much more. And also, we'll have interviews with some of your favorite fighters. The MMA Report podcast can be found on RadioInfluence.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and SoundCloud.